I've become quite sober in the last year and a half because of traveling and becoming aware of certain trends and crises that are developing. I used to think that being a Christian was a privilege. Now, men and women, I believe it's an awesome responsibility. In the world today, to name the name Christ. It seems like everywhere I go, people are starting to ask the question, where do I fit in? What can I do? Well, maybe tonight God will speak to your heart and what He would have you do. I would rather be alive right now than any other time in history that I've ever studied. Because I think we have an opportunity for an impact that hadn't been given Christians for years. And I just pray that our generation will rise to the occasion. Because if we don't, my Sean and my Kelly might not have a generation to arise to. Matthew 5 says, don't turn in your Bible. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. I believe there are certain crises that are developing that we must face in this generation, in the next 5 years. I want to go through some of these crises and then touch on our responsibility. The one big crisis we face is the population crisis. The crisis of population. Do you know, men and women, today, almost 240,000 people were added to the world's population. 73 million last year of births over deaths. And there's no indication that that trend is going to slow down. I believe in the next few years we are going to face a crisis of almost every single life-sustaining element in the world. Not only energy, oil. In 1975, 350 million tons of wheat was consumed. In 1976, 379 million. 1977, or 78, 416 million. And this year will be over 431 million, going up at a rate between 20 and 25 million tons a year. The last reports that the last 3-4 years there have been good crops, but the pattern is breaking down. Another crisis we face is a military crisis. I met with representatives of the Joint Chiefs because of some things that had developed, and they had two questions they wanted to have answered. One was this: how in the world in Campus Crusade for Christ have you gotten better than 5,000 staff members? Some of the sharpest people in the world. They said, how in the universities in the last 5 years have you spoken to more than any other person alive? How do you get the crowds out? How do you recruit? They had spent millions of dollars on the advertisement, the U.S. Army wants to join you, and they couldn't account for 1,500 recruits. They said, what are we doing wrong? Then the other question was a very interesting question. Every time I think of it, it encourages me as a believer. They did a study of the U.S. servicemen because of the volunteer army, which is a disaster. And they spent millions of dollars, and they did it in the northeast part of the United States, the final work on it. And the man who was interviewing me said we put all the information into the computers. And it came out, and then he said in the language of you Christians, that the U.S. servicemen is sinful and self-centered. He said, how do you discipline a sinful, self-centered serviceman in a volunteer army? And I was thinking to myself, come on, guys. You could have given me all those millions of dollars and just read Romans 3:23. Where the literal perversion or translation is, all U.S. servicemen are sinful and self-centered and fall short of the glory of God. The second most powerful military force in the world coming to a Christian saying, what are we doing wrong? We have the crises of nuclear war. A few weeks ago, in relationship to salt, I think it was NBC, I was speaking, my wife watched it, had a one-hour special on what would happen if a nuclear war broke out. My wife said it was terrifying. She literally got sick to her stomach of what would happen. But not an all-out, just a limited nuclear war. Like one brings out, if just one bomb dropped there in Missouri, it'd destroy 80% of the population of Missouri. There's a nuclear war breaking out, at least 130 million Americans alone would die. Salt, too, is upon us. Where do you stand? You can't even know what the truth is. Maybe you watched CBS. Three nights in a row, 10-minute specials. And the Pakistanian bomb. Pakistan is now assembling a bomb paid for by Gaddafi of Libya, called the Muslim bomb, the Islam bomb, excuse me, saying it's going to wield us might around the world. Soon another 10 to 13 nations, and with some of them within months, will have the bomb. And the problem of military warfare, so much of it is we might be getting to the point where retaliatory weapons are obsolete. You won't know who launched the attack. This is why things like the Trident submarine, I'm not too excited about it because it might be obsolete in 2 years. Set up where the weapons are placed within the country. Who exploded? The Chinese, the Russians, the PLO? Who? Who do you retaliate against? Zero. You can't retaliate. Weapons in outer space, shot straight down, who fired it? And a military crisis. And this has developed a social crisis. 14, 15 years ago, I had an opportunity to study and research in a what you would call a Marxist indoctrination center. I did not go there because I was a Marxist, but I went there to do my homework because I knew I was going to be debating Marxists and be confronted by Marxism in the university campus, and I believe in doing your homework. It's a place where Che Guevara and Fidel Castro laid their strategy to take Cuba. I was taught seven things that would take place in the United States shortly before it crumbled from within. This was 14, 15 years ago. I shared these things with my wife about 9 years ago when we met. And about a year ago, she said, honey, do you realize every one of those seven things has been fulfilled? I realized this was not a year ago, but 2 years ago. This was 14 to 15 years ago. One, the international authority of the CIA had to be undermined, weakened. Second, The ability of the FBI had to be undermined within the country. Third, the disgracing of the presidency of the United States. Fourth, the election of the presidency of an evangelical Christian. Fifth, the radicals would go straight and do it through the system. They called it the coat and tie approach, which has happened. Sixth, there'd be a push for disarmament. And the United States would give in and give away. And I remember they joked, why? Because the United States had too high of opinion of people. They were too trusting. I always wondered how this would relate and everything. I thought it was rather realistic. So I read a report and heard some senators recently that had met with President Carter in a private meeting. And they came out rather startled, saying they appreciated the sincerity of our president, which I do, and the born-again experience he's allegedly had. They said what scared them most was his born-again opinion of the Russians. How he got red in the face and irritated the moment anyone would suggest the Russians would cheat. And he said that's what most startled them most. Men and women, shortly, I believe we can have violence break out again. Worse than we ever saw in the 60s and 70s. I don't have time tonight, but in the master tape that I will be doing for distribution at the National Youth Directors Convention, I'll be going into more detail here of 5 steps an individual goes through to violence and where we are today. I think within 18 months, violence can break out. In 1972, I started to teach that there will become a break in the violence. It'll dissipate. Calm will come into campus, but it'll be deceptive. And everybody kind of laughed at him for a long time. I said, oh, come on. The whole society's changed. And then some professors at UCLA, I think it was, and some others came out with a report, almost verbatim. The lull on the campus, the calm, is deceptive. Underneath, the issues and the bitterness is going deeper and deeper and deeper. Two things I taught then would come onto the scene and would probably trigger it eventually. 2 years ago at Talbot Theological Seminary, giving the last address at their evangelism conference, I said the same thing. Two things. One, the draft. That if they ever came to the point of reinstating the draft, it could blow the lid. See, they almost have to, I think, put the draft back in. From everything I've been able to find out, our military is a disaster. I'm shocked at it. In my Sunday school class, the teacher was on active duty for a long time and now in reserves. He just came back from, see, the two weeks, I think it was, active duty. He was very sober. And I said, Dave, what's wrong? He said, if you would have seen the last 2 weeks what I saw in the military, it would scare the hell out of you. He said, I can't believe how shocked I was when I saw our active military. The equipment. He said, 4/5 of the equipment wasn't even operative for loading weapons for warfare overseas. I was just on a plane, and there was a representative of the Pentagon, and we were talking about the draft, and he said, yeah, we're going to be going back to it. And I said, you know, I think it's going to blow the lid off. He said, I don't think so. We've done some research, and about 60% of the people feel there won't be any problem. I said, yeah, and I bet about 70% of the people you interviewed were the businessmen. Said, yeah, says the age group of 18 to 35 that you better interview. Those who went through the 60s and 70s that are now out in white collar business jobs, and they still remember that nothing was accomplished. Then the other thing is nuclear power. I think nuclear power can trigger it. For this reason, see, the dominant philosophy today that's motivating people, many of them don't realize it, is humanism. And almost all value in life is determined by humanism. What protects life is good, what takes away from life is evil, because all they have to hang on to is life. And it used to be the things that threatened life was on other continents. I mean, the wars in Vietnam and Cambodia and Korea, other places, but all of a sudden, it's right in our own backyard. Nuclear power. That's why many psychologists say that the greatest single emotion today is fear, and it's subconscious. And when it breaks out the next time, it's going to be what I call blatant, very blatant violence. For this reason, and speaking to thousands of students over the past decade, I've seen quite a big change take place in attitudes. In the late 60s and early 70s, as I asked students, high school and college students, if they thought they could change their world, if they really thought there were solutions, they immediately responded yes. They got involved. Today I ask students the same question. They say, no, there's no way. There are no answers. I don't think I can change my world. As a result, when violent breaks out the next time, I think we're going to be more conditioned by Marcusean philosophy than we ever were in the 60s and early 70s. Marcusean philosophy is that don't worry about what takes place afterwards, just destroy, 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 and hope that whatever happens afterwards is better than what you started with. That if you have a plan for afterwards, then those in authority will come along and say, look, you give here, we'll give here, and water down your plan. Afterwards, you won't have anything better than what you started out to destroy. So just don't even think about anything afterwards, and just blatant violence. And I think that's what we will see. And you're going to see a combining of the 18 to 25-year-olds with the 25 to 35-year-olds, which they couldn't do in the 60s and 70s. And you're going to see this. They tried to do it before, and they couldn't. The bringing together of the student movements, the labor unions, and the protest movements. They always tried it before. They could never get the labor unions in. But now the labor unions passed a new law that you can be involved in protest movements and still be a member of the unions. At Washington, D.C. recently, we saw something happen for the first time in, I guess you have to say, many years. In the anti-nuclear power demonstration, student groups, the protest movements, and the labor unions. Now, I talked to one young lady, and she said, this is just the beginning. We have an identity crisis, a tremendous identity crisis, as a result of some things I'll be touching on in just a minute. Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? At one university, the student wrote the famous saying, we've met the enemy and he is us. Former president of the American Psychological Association, the APA, speaking to the faculty and administrations at Harvard, called upon modern medicine to create an anti-aggression pill for humanity. I asked one young man why he stopped the bombings. He was involved in some of the bombings. He's now in prison. He still thinks I turned him in. They were watching me and caught him. I said, why'd you stop the bombings? He said, I came to the conclusion that bombs cannot change individuals. And individuals need to be changed.
at a large eastern university, very prestigious one. I was speaking to the faculty administration on the problems that we face, the crises and the solutions to them. And after I finished, the head of the psychology department came up and said, "I hope to God, Mr. McDowell, you're right about Jesus Christ, because their problems are beyond psychology." At a university on the West Coast, one of the most prestigious in the world, one of the very wealthy or precocious could ever send their children there. I won't name it in Palo Alto. There was one man who was so popular, and in his classes he often has students in his elective courses of over 1,000. Only 7,000 in the university. Of course, he teaches in the area of human sexuality, family relationships, where people are bankrupt. He said to two friends of mine, Dick Day and Jim Stump, "The students line up outside of my doorway with problems." He says, "Tell you the truth, I don't know what to tell them." A student came to me in Southern California, and she said, "Could you help me?" And I said, "I hope so." Came from a school that boasted about psychologists for the students to get their minds on straight, heads on straight, and the faculty. And I said, "Why didn't you go to one of the psychologists?" She said, "I did." But he said he couldn't help me. He was going to a psychiatrist in Beverly Hills. I find myself in some meetings saying, "What am I doing here? I'm a farm boy from Michigan. Brought him a little old tiny town. A bathroom caught fire and almost spread to the house one day. Kind of where you don't get a lot of cultural education. You don't learn to speak right. I found myself in a meeting at a very illustrious private club of heads of various corporations and corporation lawyers. And it was a dinner. There was silverware in the right, silverware in the left, and silverware in the front. Well, I didn't know if I should start with my fingers, and I always just watched the host star for the first 15 minutes. But when I walked into that meeting, I had an attitude I pray to God I'll never have again. Here were businessmen that many of your fathers, your parents, people would be watching by videotape, listening by tape, would strive to be and have what these men have. They ought to. The corporation head, the chairman of the board. If only I can get that, then I'll have meaning. I said, "Lord, these people aren't interested. They got everything apart from you." Don't leave you much. The 35 men there, 27 indicated on their card, they wanted to know Jesus Christ personally. I walked out of there and I had to confess my attitude. And I said, "Lord, may I never face another group of men with the attitude they aren't interested in you." These men had an identity crisis like high school and college students have today. And yet they were the top echelon, the top of the ladder. Suicide. The recent statistics of a few weeks ago I read from the Suicide Research Bureau. Right now in the universities, a suicide rate has increased so much that if there were people dying at the same rate from a disease, it'd be a national major epidemic. Everybody says how the university is the solution. Prime yourself for life. At the same age, if you're in the university over against working, you have a 50% higher chance of suicide. You got a lot of going against you. You see, almost everything in society that produces stability and security has been removed. People have nothing to hang on to, and this leads into the next crisis.
the crises of leadership. It's probably one of the most crucial. First of all, in the leadership politically. One philosopher said, the United States is a nation of sheep without a shepherd. Now I think you'd almost say it's a world of sheep without a shepherd. We are bankrupt politically around the world. Where are our leaders? Where are the men we can look to and admire and follow and instill momentum in us? Where are the De Gaulle's, the Churchill's, the Ho Chi Minh's, the Mao's, the Lenin's, the John F. Kennedy? Now, a lot of things I didn't agree with Kennedy, but let me tell you. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Where are them? We have none. The whole world, not just one country, two countries, not Europe, the whole world. We are bankrupt politically. Then we have a crisis in leadership in the area of business. Where are the business voices we can respect, we can respond to, that are giving us answers for the economy, for society? See, we need them now of all times. The world is so interwoven economically that we need business leaders that would give us leadership. At a convention not long ago in New Orleans, corporation heads from around the country met. A friend of mine in IBM was there. And he related to me how he went from one corporation head to another. He'd say, Jack, Bob, do you see any solutions for society? Do you see any answers for the country? He said, Josh, every single one of them said no. You wouldn't have had that 3 years ago. We have a crisis in the leadership in education. Where are our educational leaders that we can look up to, we can admire? Where are the people that really know where we are living? We don't have. The university is bankrupt. Oh, I tell you, throw science in with it. Science is now going through one of the biggest credibility gaps it can have, thanks to Three Mile Island, which almost became 3 inches. I mean, to me, what happened at Three Mile Island, what the scientists told us scientifically accurately could not happen, they have lost their credibility. Thing is, they know it too. Look at our educational system. Last year, 120,000 teachers were attacked. In many budgets, one of the biggest items is security measures for teachers. Do you know the most discouraged people that I meet in the United States today? Teachers. Frustrated. Not knowing what to do. See, all moral basis for discipline has been removed in our country. And there's nothing they can do. I think it'd be mighty hard for me to remain in the secular educational system today. I don't think I could do it with a clear conscience, tell you the truth. And we're entering into a very dangerous mood in this country. Very similar to the Soviet Union. Now in the Soviet Union, they have the freedom of religion. They do. It's guaranteed by the Constitution. And I think in many respects they uphold it. You say, well, you're naive. Well, hang on. The Constitution guarantees the freedom of religion. But many people skip over what else it guarantees. The freedom of anti-religious propaganda. Not the freedom of religious propaganda. You can be a Christian, guaranteed by the Constitution. But it's unconstitutional to tell anyone. To propagate in any way or measure, it's unconstitutional. What we are entering into in the United States and starting the universities and the media is the freedom of religion and the freedom of anti-religious proselytizing. It's a dangerous mood. And seeing this pressure from the universities, the major secular state universities, I'm probably the first person to be
call it may limit your... My mind just went blank. May limit what you can say. Censored. By one of the first individuals to be censored in universities. Let me show you what I mean. One university, they said, I could not mention Jesus Christ. I could not in any way relate Jesus Christ to any individual that came to the meeting. And they monitored it. Monitored the talks. They said, if you step out of line, we'll cancel you. They'd already canceled it, and we had to fight to get it back. Backfired on, we were expecting 6,000 out, and we had 13,000. I sent people, go ahead now and do it all over. But anyway. So I just get up and said, men and women, I can't mention the name Jesus Christ. Said, whenever I refer to him, I'll refer to him as you know who, or my friend. Do you know my friend stands at the door and knocks? We had 1,300 people to follow up because they came to know you know who. At another university, the regents said, Mr. McDowell, you cannot share your testimony on campus. You cannot tell any student in this university what Jesus Christ has done in your life. No, of course I could go there and do the opposite and be totally with him. I could go into this other university and totally degraded Christianity, probably received about $4,000 plus first class round trip for two people and first class accommodations paid for by the taxpayers of that state. All I'd have to do is change my message to be a negative against Christianity. And with my background now, I could go out and be making $3,000 to $5,000 a day by ripping Christianity. And be totally constitutional in any university. Because you see, we have the freedom of anti-religious proselytizing. Another university where I live came to me. 40,000 students. Just before I got up to speak the first night, the dean of the legal authority came and said, because you're a Christian, you cannot be persuasive in speaking on campus. I thought he was joking. I said, I can't what? He said, you can't be persuasive. I said, mister, if I blow my nose, I'm going to reach the first three rows. He said, no student can walk out of this auditorium with a greater desire to know Christ than when they walked in. Another university. Because it was a Christian, they could not introduce me as an author. Men and women. This is allegedly higher educational institutions of our country. This is where we have freedom of speech. You're sitting there saying, no, come on, Josh, this is that. You think you're saying that. Think what I've been thinking. I still think it's a nightmare. They couldn't even sell my books in the bookstore in over 400 schools that's used as a text. Evidence or more evidence. Well, first night after I announced that my books couldn't be sold, books were right off campus. Came on and said, hey, look, there's a non-Christian bookstore. I said, we're just a half block off campus. We'll stay open until 9 o'clock and have your books there and tapes and everything. It'll be great for us. We're new. Get a lot of new people in. I said, I appreciate that. So the second night, I got up and after the message door, I said, men and women, so-and-so bookstore, a half block off campus. We have my books and tapes for sale. They'll be open until 9 o'clock. Next morning, I got a memo from the legal department. Saying, dear Mr. McDowell, you cannot announce that your books are in sale at so-and-so bookstore a half block off campus. You know, I wouldn't have the gall to say that to someone. Well, the next night was the last night. So the message is over. I said, men and women, I have a memo to read to you.
Dear Mr. McDowell, you cannot announce that your books are in sale at so-and-so bookstore a half block off campus. Another crisis we have is the crises of absolutes. Let me move along here. Crises of absolutes. We have eroded all absolutes in society. Look at the teachers in our high schools. What discipline is there? What basis of morality is there? Who do you appeal to? Fannie Hill or Billy Graham? Charles Manson or Anita Bryant? There's none you can appeal to anymore. See, 15 years ago, you wouldn't have had that. There was a Judeo-Christian ethic. Today, there's none. Watergate was not a moral issue. It was a political issue. Pragmatic issue. Some of the most revealing phrases of our society were brought out at Watergate, and they missed the point. In the hearings, I don't want to mention names here, even though I usually do. One of the men in the hearings, very prominent today, was asked, it was on television, it was Weicker. The conversation went like this, and I couldn't believe the newspapers, television, everyone missed it, even the Christians. Said, was what you did wrong? Yes. Ooh. Remember Weicker turned around, they all looked at each other. Would you do it again? No. Boy, getting some morality back in the government. Just government, honest. Great. Why? Then they missed the answer. Because of what it did to me and my family. Not because it was right or wrong. That had nothing to do with it. It's because of what it did to me and my family. In other words, if it hadn't affected me this way, you'd darn tootin' I'd do it again. And that's the ethic of society today. I hear a lot of people talking about revival. Sometimes I feel like a fish swimming upstream. You ever felt that way? Now, I believe God can bring about revival. He's given me a greater and greater conviction that it might take place, but in the flesh, I doubt it. Unless God acts in the most unbelievable way in history. For this reason, we do not have the same setting, the same society when the great revivals broke out under Whitfield, Wesley, Moody, Sunday. For this reason. See, we haven't seen it today. We haven't seen it with Billy Graham. No, don't get me wrong, man. I thank God for Billy Graham. I don't know how the man does it. There is no man that I respect more than Billy Graham. The price he's paid, the motto he's been for so many of us, the sacrifice he's been willing to make. Every one of us in this room holds Ruth and Billy Graham so very much. But he's never seen what happened in the great revival of history. And it's not Billy Graham's fault. He's probably done more than he's ever done. But for this reason. See, back in the times of Whitfield, Wesley, Moody, even Sunday, there were absolutes in society. See, people knew what was right and wrong. You say, well, they did what was wrong. Yes, but they knew it was wrong. Today, all absolutes have been removed. And when you remove the absolutes, you remove the basis for revival, for the Holy Spirit to bear conviction. The Holy Spirit doesn't work in a vacuum. This is why in Romans 1, the third deliverance, it says, just gave them up to a depraved mind. A mind of no absolutes. Where God cannot work with them anymore. And we are living in a society without absolutes. And I do not believe revival is possible. Unless God does a tremendous, mighty act. And he just might do it. There's a change in the moral direction of this country. Almost a moral crisis. Oh, Lord. I take 15 more minutes, you don't mind, do I? A moral crisis. And this is where our opportunity lies. In the last 6 months to a year, I think there's been a moral change or direction of morality in this country. I think we've seen a change, almost a trend back, to the biblical view of marriage and sex in a way that I never thought was possible. A lot of it is a result of living together. What was allegedly started out as free sex, meaningful sex, has failed. Like one co-ed that wrote for a major magazine said, it's just not worth the hassle. And now with the Lee Marvin thing, it's even been worse. Over 2,000 cases in California alone launched. I think that's hilarious. Yeah? The American Council of Life Insurance, for preparing their policies and everything else, interviewed thousands of people between the ages of 14 and 25 from all segments of society. 76% said they wanted a one-time family relationship. 76%. The Georgia Cooperative Extension Service and the ones they interviewed said 96% eventually wanted to get married. You wouldn't have gotten that a few years ago. The TV special, One of the Three, The American Family and Endangered Species, said one thing that amazed them in doing their research for the program was that 80% of the people they talked to said they wanted a one-time marriage family unit. The high school's Who's Who of last year, high school students in Who's Who, 81% said they interviewed 21,300 in Who's Who. 81% said they wanted the traditional marriage relationship. Fifty-four percent said they would not live with the opposite sex until marriage. 3/4% said they had never had sexual intercourse. There's a change. And I've sensed this in the campus, in the mood of the maximum sex talk. There's more of a seriousness. More, I'll really listen to what you have to say. I think it's the only way to explain what's happening to our TV special, The Secret of Loving. About 100,000 letters and not a negative comment. Never happened before in television. But let's see what we're being programmed with. The three major networks, I won't name them. Between September the 10th and December 2nd of last year, in 762.5 hours of primetime television, 88% of all sex shown was depicted outside of marriage. 88% depicted outside, 88% said he wanted an inside. Implied or explicit sexual acts were shown 30 to 40 times a typical viewing week. Intimate sexual behavior seen at the rate of 2.7 per hour between 9 and 11 o'clock. Sexual behavior occurred 7 times more between unmarrieds than between husbands and wives. Men and women, almost diametrically the opposite of what the trend is indicating. We are being conditioned by the media.
How do we fit in? You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. You're the light in the hill. Ever there's been a time for those of us that have the opportunity of knowing Jesus Christ to witness through personal relationships, it's now. People are hurting in interpersonal relationships. You know, I used to think that the biggest problem today was that people didn't feel they could be loved. It's not. The biggest problem today is people don't think they can love. They don't feel they can love. They have no models. Where are the people loving the society? Relationships. Ever the testimony of the businessman. Ever be effective, it's now. Another's in dating, sex, love, and marriage. I believe in the next 5 to 10 years, the greatest platform we will have for Christ is in your dating life, your sex life, your love life, and marriage. People are crying out for true love, for sexual intercourse that reaps fruit and not burdens. I believe in the next few years the greatest testimony I can have, the greatest platform, is my relationship with my wife and my two darling children, Sean and Kelly. I was just at a camp of a major church in this country, a church that I love. The pastor that, oh, I wish to God I could have met him 30 years ago. I've never been in the presence of a man like this person. Very wealthy church. One of the most powerful, known around the world. Of course, one of the largest in the world. I just did a camp. 500 there are junior high and high school students. Do you know what the number one question was of this, the male student was, the junior high and high school student was to me? Mr. McDowell, what can I do about my dad? I'd say, what do you mean? Well, he never has time for me. He never talks to me. He never goes anywhere with me. Men and women, we've lost our models. Husbands and wives, parents. You see, the problem now is, of any time we needed models in Christianity, it's right now. And our spiritual leadership in this country is going bankrupt. So many of those writing the books on sex, love, and marriage. And those speaking, taking the forefront in Christian leadership. Going through divorces, sexual immorality. And now people want to be models and they don't know how to be. Sex, your dating life. The greatest testimonies for reaching people to Christ in your campus. If you're single, it'll be your dating life. If you're married, it'll be the relationship with your wife and your children. The joy, the meaningfulness. Almost lost it by default. I look at the blacks in our country, the minority groups. My heart goes out to my black brothers and sisters. Because they're the ones in a few years that's going to pay the price. And I have to be careful when I say this. Say, oh, you're trying to be sensational, and then I almost believe the blacks are worse off now than they were 10 years ago. Oh, just wait a minute. I'm getting an education. Getting the white collar jobs. Basically, tokenism. Where's all the government legislation now that was so active? Where are all the senators?
the governors, the corporations. When the violence broke out between 65 and 72, where are they now? They could care less. Almost all your social programs are bankrupt. They interviewed just several weeks ago a large number of whites. Do you think the blacks are better off now than before? 70-some percent said definitely. They asked the blacks, unless 30% said yes. Mark my word, it's going to be a boiling pot. I want a black brother to come up here. He came up and shared a burden with me. It really struck a chord with me. I want him to share it with you and give your name and where you're from. We will.
Hi, my name is James Williams, and I'm from Mississippi. Since we've been here, a group of us have gotten together, and our hearts has been burdened with the desire to see 100 black men come on staff at Campus Crusade for Christ in 1980 at this IBS training. So we're wanting a nationwide prayer chain to start, and I'm nervous.
Me too, if you were up here.
But we believe in God just by the fact that I'm here and sharing what I'm sharing, that He's going to answer that prayer. We're praying that people will get involved, that people here will go back and challenge people to get involved in a 24-hour prayer chain, that God will give us 100 black men. We're praying through the week. This is an advertisement in the Joyful News. Please get in touch with us if you're interested. Thank you.
Oh, we need black leadership to rise to the occasion. What's happened to the black leadership? What's happened to it? No, I sure thank God for Jesse Jackson. I don't know the guy. Always wanted to meet him. Things I've heard about him, seen in him, he's about the only one I got any respect for. And I pray for that man almost every day. What do we do? One thing we need to do is pray for the pastors of our country and around the world. I love the pastors of our country. I think the men that hold the hardest job today is that pastor gutting it out in the local church. And God, in the last 18 months, has moved me to try to be the greatest blessing I can to those in the pastorate. Oh, they have such a harder job than I have. My job is simple compared to what they have. And I pray you'll go from here and go back to your pastor and love him. He needs to know you love him. Share with him what you've learned here. Tell him you want to be a part of his church. Help him in his ministry. Probably blow him out of the saddle. We need a strategy. I'm not going to give you a strategy. I don't have it all right now, but believe me, I'm working on one. Fidel Castro said, I want men with three ingredients. People who believe with their heart, their mind, their soul. Second, people who have a strategy. And third, people who are committed to that strategy. And I think we need now an over-evaluation by the entire body of Christ of a strategy for the next 3 to 5 years. This one thing I so greatly appreciate about the man God has called me to work with and under Christ to work for, Dr. Bill Bright. Boy, you can knock him, but he knows where he's going. And I've gotten more motivation from him and practicality of Christian living and the guts to stand out and be different and swim upstream. I don't know how the man does it.
Most of you aren't staff at Crusade. I am. I've been on almost 17 years. Oh, that's a long time. Seems like 7 months. I served Christ with probably some of the greatest people in the whole world. Few losers, but... It's humbling to be a part with them. And, you know, gosh, my whole ministry has been given to me by them. The staff give me my platform. But here we are in Crusade. Dr. Bright, just night and day, now raising millions of dollars. Not for him, for us. I bet the last thing he likes to do is raise money. Not like me. Man, it just goes against my grain. Love to lead someone to Christ, tell them about Christ, challenge them about the world, and come asking for money. Man, I get cold feet. That's going to change all. We need to pray for men like Dr. Bright, Billy Graham, the leaders of InterVarsity, Baptist Student Union, Navigators, Evangelical Free Church, the Baptist denominations, Presbyterians and Methodists. We need to pray for the leadership of this country. I think if we started here, and I mean sincere prayer, things will start to change. You've been to IBS. Many of you spend a lot of money. Other businessmen, your churches sponsor some of you to come here. You have had an opportunity in 4 weeks to study under some of the top men in this country. I mean, some of the men. Some of you have had an opportunity to study under men that I'd have given anything to have been able to study under. Kaiser. Rodmacher. I mentioned Soucy, but I did. Oh, to have men like that. Hannah. Take time out of their summers, their vacation time, and come here and teach you, men and women. You have got a responsibility. I know people in other countries would give anything to be here, and they can't. Money, hundreds of thousands of dollars that's gone into IBS. Some of you are going into teaching. Into business. Lawyers, doctors. We need Christian teachers and lawyers and doctors. But one thing right now we need a little more. Are men and women. Full-time service. Not full-time commitment. Every Christian should have that. But we need men and women to staff at Campus Crusade for Christ and InterVarsity Navigators in the seminaries. We need men in Trinity and Dallas and Talbot. What's the name of that other one? Western. Southwestern. And I pray that God will use something said tonight to bring you to your knees tonight and evaluate the next 12 months. I don't believe we have a lot of time. At least we're not going to have the open doors that we have right now. I want to close with a phrase that was said to me in the illustration. I was invited to the White House for a meeting. Some things that had developed in the country. It's kind of one of those situations saying, Lord, what am I doing here? Sitting with some of the most powerful people in this country and the world. Let me share with you something that helps me. Some of you are going to get meetings like that, your action groups. I do this. I keep my mouth shut for 1 hour. Just let everybody pull their ignorance. And after 1 hour, I've learned that whatever you say, it'll sound intelligent. I'm serious.
After 1 hour, I don't care what you say, it'll sound intelligent. It was about an hour and a half it took for him to get around with it. Finally, the chairman said, "Well, Mr. McDowell, what do you have to say?" I said, "Men, what you've been doing is trying to apply political solutions to a spiritual problem." I said, "What we need are political solutions where we have political problems. And we need economic solutions where we have economic problems. And we need educational solutions where we have educational problems." And I said, "Men, we need spiritual solutions where we have spiritual problems. And what we have here is a spiritual problem." The third most powerful man in this country leaned over and whispered in my ear. He said, "Mr. McDowell, it's only people like you that have the message that you have that can meet that need." And I think he was leaning over and whispering in the ears of those of you here at IBS, saying, "People like you that have the training that you've had and the message that you have that can meet that need." I think he was leaning over to the businessmen and women of this nation, saying, "It's people like you that have the message that you have and the financial means of supporting it going out that can meet that need." A businessman in Germany shared this with me. He'd been intimately a part of it. This happened a few years ago. I've shared this with some of you in the campus. And the reason I shared it has had quite an impact in my life and probably will as long as I live. A 15-year-old East German person, just a kid, was sent over to West Berlin to accomplish a very key task. He had just about finished it and they found him out. He had to leave and he couldn't go back through the regular channels. He had to go over the wall, kind of reverse. And this businessman, who had been one of the guards, said they doubled the security and everything. And they saw him approach the wall. They shouted for him to stop, and he didn't. He said, "We fired many rounds into the air," and he said, "I guess you'd have to call it a freak accident took place. Two of the bullets came down and struck him and went right behind the neck in the spinal cord. He fell on the West Berlin side. The guard ran up to him. He was holding this kid's head in his arm. The last thing that 15-year-old spy said to him, 'I'm dying for communism. What are you living for?' I ask you, men and women, who are you living for?" Thank you.